So welcome everybody to today's meditation class. And just to remind everybody that we always have the two classes going simultaneously. In here is the what we call the ongoing meditation class for those who have meditated here before, because we usually give about 15 minutes of instructions. And that'll be followed by about 40, 45 minutes meditation, and afterwards some questions and answers. And if those of you who come in for the first time to meditation, please know that that class is being held in the room to my right. Who's actually teaching it this week? John Treasure, okay. That's in the room to my right. And other than that, if you've meditated before, fine. But if you haven't meditated, John is just coming in now. Hi, John. You see, he's got a bald head, which shows that he's a good meditator. Sort of. So anyway, for those of you who want to come for this ongoing class, it's in here. The introduction to meditation class in the room next door. Okay. Okay, people are coming and going. Sometimes when we get the PA system going, sometimes the PA system here just goes next door. I remember doing that on a meditation retreat. We used to hire the Redemptorist Monastery in Vincent Street as the venue. And I remember one Sunday morning starting to teach the meditation, and then the priest from the church next door came running in, and he said... Your mobile, whatever we had, was actually interfering with their PA system. So when they were doing some service for a mass, they had Ajahn Brahm coming online, not them. That was funny. Well, we did turn it off afterwards out of compassion for them. Who am I to interfere with God's will? If he wants them to listen to my talk, that's fair enough, I reckon. Anyway, let's be serious. Now's the time for our meditation class. Have you got a chair, Jacob? Have you got a chair for Jacob? Yeah, come on. We've got to look after our elderly. He was a former president years ago, and a monk. There we go. Good. Anyway, okay, well, make your choice. Okay, one of the important parts of meditation is always a bit of kindness. If you don't have that kindness to begin with, it's impossible to generate in the middle. So yes, please. Come on, Jacob, do what you're told, sit down. Okay. So anyway, meditation. So meditation is learning how to cut out everything else and just to focus on stillness in the center of things. It doesn't matter what's happening on the outside, to the left, to the right, up in front, behind. It's one of the things which, of course, you have to learn. And I remember learning just how to go inside and make your mind really, really peaceful inside. Sometimes meditating in train stations, meditating in airports, meditating in so many places. One of those places I remember meditating was in Hay Street Mall many years ago. And in Hay Street Mall, we sat down on the cold pavement, no cushions, about for 2 hours. I was right in front of a shop called Time Zone. And that was really noisy. But I wanted to test out what I tell others, can you do yourself? And of course, that was wonderful. I'm honest, so you could do that. It's not that hard. You imagine a bubble around you, and you're in that bubble, and the sounds are kind of outside. They're not in your space. You can hear the sounds, but you don't listen to them. listen to them, what's that song, what they're saying, what they're doing. If you don't give them attention and importance, then they are just a different type of sound. They're just noise at a distance, but they don't really affect you. And they don't disturb you. If there is a sound and you listen to it, what's that, who is that, what are they saying, are they saying something about me? Then once you start to get involved in it, that really gets noisy. When you leave it alone, it soon gets very, very still. So, this is where we've got some more chairs. Oh, Jake, we've got some more stairs unless you want to sit outside. Okay, great, okay. Very good. And just before you go, Jake, there was some disagreement. When you are ordaining, is that the fourth or the fifth? The fourth, okay. That's from what they call the horse's mouth. So it's the fourth. Okay, very good. Okay, you can go now. Anyway, yeah. So when we cut off everything else, put ourselves in a nice little bubble, it's easy to be silent, easy to be quiet inside. And that's also what we should do when we're meditating at any time. It may be perfectly quiet outside, but it's amazing how much noise we can create, you know, with our thinking and all the planning, all the things which you're going to do afterwards, all the places which you're going to go, all the things which you're going to fix up, all the stuff where you came from and all the problems which they had and how unfair life is, and how you've been really treated badly. I'm just thinking about myself. No, I'm not. So when you start looking at the past or the future, that creates a lot of noise. So here we're going to see if we can learn how to keep our minds peaceful, calm, by not concerning ourselves with, again, the past and future thing. It's not a hard thing to do, because once you've done it a few times, then you discover just how peaceful that is and how wonderful that is, how valuable that is. And you start to take away the value for all this thinking and planning and working things out and going over the past stuff. Once you let go of all that past stuff, it makes it easier to let go of the future stuff as well. It's the same sort of thing. All the things you plan for, all the things you expect, none of that happens usually. Even I just come back from overseas. We're still doing all sorts of planning for all sorts of other events here. But I will let you know, whatever you plan it to be, it will always be something else. That's actually a saying of the Buddha in the Saporissa Sutta. As soon as I saw that, I thought, wow. You just take that out and apply it, that whatever you think it's going to be, yang yang manyata, tang tang anyata. See, that's in Pali, if anybody knows that. I don't think anyone knows Pali here, so you're not going to criticize me for pronouncing it wrongly. But nevertheless, it says whatever you expect it to be, it will always be something else. And I kind of like that. It takes away the importance of trying to predict things, anticipate things, or start to think, well, if they do this, then I will do that. If they do something else, then I'll do another thing. You can't predict anything. It's just too much uncertainty. And because of that, the only thing you can do with the future is just leave it alone. The only thing you can really do is to equip yourself with so much energy, mindfulness, and wisdom that when you do face the future, you are prepared, not expecting what to do, but just knowing how to do it. Are you looking for a seat? Friend, I took the beginner's meditation class. Yep. Oh, that's in the room to my right. So if you go out there again, go to the right, and through there you'll find the intro. Yeah. Yeah. No, no, you're most welcome. Very good. So this is how we can learn just how to value the present moment more than the past or the future. And you'll find once you value something, it's as if like the mind would lean towards it. They even have a saying in the Pali, Buddha repeated it many, many times. You know, when you understand what meditation is, the mind leaps to the peace. It leaps to the quietness, it leaps to the stillness. It just recognizes this is something much more important than what we do for the rest of the day, thinking and planning and working things out. And I always like to add, so many people think, well, they've got problems to solve, things to do. So they want to say, let's think it through first of all, get all the solutions finished, and then we can meditate. It's like, let's get this out of the way, and then we can have the freedom to meditate. And if you have an attitude like that, you'll find you will die before you get everything out of the way. And you never meditate. So the best thing to do is get meditation out of the way first. And then you can do all the thinking and the planning and stuff. But of course, sometimes people think, oh my goodness, there's so much stuff I've started, I haven't finished yet. And the second thing to understand is about what it actually means to finish off all those outstanding jobs. And that was that great story of the Thai monk. This is many decades ago. He was just building his main hall. And when a gentleman came, when the rains retreat, the retreats came, he said, it's time, you know, he told all the builders to go home. He wanted a quiet time for the retreat. When somebody came to his monastery and asked, is your hall finished yet? And the monk said, yeah. He said, but look, there's no glass in the windows, there's no carpet on the floor, there's no cover on the roof. Are you going to leave it like this? Is it some kind of like Thai forest monk statement against building? He said, no, it's finished. He said, I don't understand. How can you say this is finished? And the monk came up and said, sir, what's done is finished. And that's a beautiful statement there. It meant he could not worry about all the extra things which need to be done later on. But right now, what's done is finished. I know there's a few people here today who work in the office for our Buddhist Society of Western Australia. Please remember, don't use that excuse at the end of the day when it's time for you to go home. And someone comes and says, are you finished your job yet? Actually, yeah, what's done is finished. Bye-bye. But anyway, I think you know what I mean there. In meditation, to meditate, what's done is finished. It will never be totally finished. Life never allows that. But you can say, this is enough. In years and years and years in the future, when you die, there'll always be some stuff which you leave unfinished. So you might as well practice doing that now. In other words, don't be compelled to get everything out of the way. And it's not that hard to do. And when you do that, you know how to rest, not to think of the past and the future, but actually to be here. And then you find much of the things which you thought you needed to worry about, think about, plan about, to complete it, you don't need to do that at all. Instead, what we do is we just learn how to let it alone, have a good rest for 45 minutes in meditation, make your mind really peaceful and strong. And you'll be surprised how afterwards you get huge amounts of inspiration, insight, intuitive understanding of what really needs to be done. And even big time, I told a story a lot in Hong Kong about one of the fellow, please excuse me, my previous occupation was being a theoretical physicist. But there's another gentleman there who, he was a Welshman, and his name was Brian Josephson. And he got a Nobel Prize for discovering quantum tunneling. And how he discovered that was meditating. His mind got very peaceful, very still, and that during that meditation, when he came out afterwards, it was very clear to him how this all works. And he got a Nobel Prize for that. So that's how you solve problems. That's how you can be very insightful and achieve all sorts of amazing stuff. And even years ago, I still remember a lady, Wani Nutt, came to one of my retreats. She had a really, really difficult job in social services. A lot of difficult decisions she had to make, never made them, came on the retreat instead. And during the retreat, she said she wasn't thinking about the problems at all. She was getting peaceful and still. And the answers came to her. They popped up during a nice deep meditation. And then she went to her room, wrote down those solutions, and told me later on that these are really good solutions. I'm going to act on these when I get back to work in a few days. But she was amazed at how she never thought about those questions. She never did anything. Just the solutions came to her. So I'm saying that just if you have some important decisions to make, don't make them. Allow the answers to come to you. Your job is to be peaceful, to be still, to clean the mind, freshen the mind, regenerate the mind, and then you've amazing just the amount of energy, power, and insight which will come. So that's how we meditate. Okay, that's a 15 minutes of little instructions. So now we can actually do some meditation. I'll do a guided meditation of about 1/4 hour, 20 minutes, and then I'll be quiet to allow you to also to be peaceful and quiet and to explore how meditation feels and how it can get very deep and peaceful. Okay, so first of all, the posture, how you're sitting, doesn't really matter, as long as you're comfortable and alert. And I say this because I've meditated in so many postures and got some deep meditations and some weird postures. As long as your body feels comfortable and alert, then that's good enough. And to make it very clear to you about how this is done, I ask you to close your eyes, and with your eyes closed, just feel how your body is sitting right now. Don't check it up against some theory. This is how I usually meditate. Instead, how do you actually feel in this present moment? When I ask that question of my body, it's like the first steps to establish mindfulness. When I ask a question, I get an answer. I can experience the sensations in my body. But this is just, to me, a very rough mindfulness. So I'm going to focus it on the specific parts of my body and move that attention up my body, like a body scan. I'm going to start with my toes. I don't usually pay much attention to my toes. They're very comfortable, nothing much wrong with them. But I do this exercise so that my mindfulness can become stronger. So I ask my toes, how are you down there? When I ask the question, I get an answer. If my mindfulness is weak and I can't feel my toes at all, then I wiggle them, just to get some contact between my brain and my toes. And once I can feel those toes, now I add this one extra quality of kindness. I'm a friend to my body. I'm not aiming to train my body. I'm aiming to work with it as a good friend. And I'm keeping aware of these sensations in my toes all the time. And I do experience, honestly, my toes now start to relax. They feel different. They're not moving, but any tightness or fear in that area of the body eases off. And everything feels loose and open. I'm not putting any tension on those muscles in my toes. They're all loose and at ease. And I can feel the sensations there, just in my toes. It's getting better, more relaxed. And if I can relax my toes like that, imagine the other parts of my body I can relax. Things I never thought you could relax. You've learned how to. Next go to my feet. With the heels and the soles, the uppers, the skin and the bones and ligaments and whatever else is inside. Feet, how are you? I care for you. And I can feel them. As I'm feeling them, I do add the kindness and experience it easing, becoming more peaceful, becoming more relaxed. The sensation does actually change. But your mindfulness has to be clear enough to notice the experience of knowing how your feet feel, to be able to know that it does actually change for the better. Kind of feels like it's opening out, it's relaxing. Then I go up to my ankles. Making sure that the ankles are not stretched on one side. They're kind of at ease, comfortable. Sometimes it's like I ask my ankles, is there anything I can do to make you more comfortable? When they say no, I realize they're pretty relaxed. So I move up to the calves of my two legs. I'm mostly aware of the muscles, but also can feel the skin on the outside. And for me, it's a little bit hot. But I scan my attention up my lower legs. And as I go up, I always give this kindness, this comfort. I wish you well. When as Buddhists we chant, may all beings be happy and well. Your legs are part of this being. So I wish my legs and the muscles in those legs to be happy and well, to have no fear, to be at ease, to relax to the max. I can feel those legs nicely relaxed. Go to my knees. My knees have a different sensation than any other part of my body. So I know I'm being aware of my knees right now. And as I'm being aware of them, there's no great aches or pains in my knees. I don't play sport. But I can feel those knees, and I start to relax them. And it's like they were tight before, And now that tightness is eased off and it becomes loose, free. When I can be aware that the sensation in the knees is comfortable, and I can move away and up to my thighs. If there's any ache or pain, you bruise your knees, have had some sort of operation or got some ligament problem, stay there. Because when you're aware of a part of your body, that awareness does change. You get what we call feedback. And if you add the right amount of kindness, you find that these things, they do relax. And sometimes all you're doing is just opening the channels for the body's own healing to go to those places. Then you move your attention further up. Goes to the thighs, big muscles. And as I'm scanning up my thighs, just relaxing everything as I go up. You know if it's relaxing or if it's getting tense. And usually find that attitude which actually does relax the muscles. That's what I call kindness. If it's real kindness, sincere, you can feel everything opening up and becoming at ease. I get to my buttocks. As soon as I get to the bottom, it's always some tightness there. It's the pressure of my body against the cushion passing through those buttocks. And all I do is to make sure that they're as evenly spread as possible, the pressure. When I do that, I know that because of this evenness and it's not going to change, the experience will disappear after a little while. And I won't even be aware of that pressure. That tells me a lot about how relaxation works. Sometimes when there's nothing to do, the body just forgets it. And I get to my waist. I usually just stretch my back a bit at this point, and that makes my waist feel really good. And just scan quickly up my back, making sure those vertebrae are all just nicely bent. I think the word is in lordosis, I think they called it. That's where my spine feels the most comfortable. If you feel like leaning back, try it, see if it works for you. Your job is to find out for yourself, not through theory, but through experience. What is the most comfortable meditation posture for you? And I go to the bottom of my body again. I just move upwards. Usually the only things which I can be aware of are just the digestive tracts. So like I scan upwards and can feel still some pressure in my intestines. It must be some of the food today hasn't fully digested. Just the intestines are doing their job. It's like I wish them well. And get to the stomach. And if you heard, I just did a very slight burp. Some air needed to come out, so fine, come out. Scanning up past the stomach to the lungs. That also has got a special type of feeling to it. So you're aware of those lungs. And they do a huge amount of work. but they are endangered by all of the respiratory diseases around these days. So I care for my lungs. I don't feel fear. I feel confidence. And that helps relax whatever I'm aware of. Go up to my heart. If there's any problems in some of the organs in your back, livers and kidneys and stuff, if you can feel anything, then just give it lots and lots of relaxing kindness. For me, it's just everything seems to be humming along perfectly around there. And then I get to my shoulders. Once you're at your shoulders, I know that sometimes people say they don't understand what letting go is. So this is also an exercise to relax your shoulders. First of all, scrunching them up. Scrunching, tightening, squeezing them up together as much as you can. And then, let go. And of course you're very aware what that letting go is. The scrunching up was done through some willpower control. And then when you let go, my muscles anyway, my shoulder muscles, they relax deeper than when they started. So it's a great way of relaxing those muscles and teaching you just what letting go really is. It's like a string which has been stretched by pulling on both ends. And then you let go of both ends and the string becomes loose. And I just scan the attention down the arms, the upper arms, to the elbow, the lower arms, the wrist, and then the hands. And I'm going fast, you can linger if you wish. If you find anything there which is unusual, which is painful or tight, you may have had some injury there, I'm not sure. If you have anything there which needs attention, just stop, stay there and zap that part of your body. Imagine all the kindness which you've generated so far just pouring in to say maybe an injury you've had in your wrist. Not trying to change it, but caring for it. And by caring for it, it gives you confidence. You tense up less and allow healing to happen. And then I go up to my shoulders again and my neck, making sure my head is well balanced on top of the neck. That's usually what causes any aches and pains. And then to my head itself. I am aware of the feelings in the muscles around my eyes, my nose and my mouth. One of the important parts of this body exercise is you know that if your emotions, especially negative emotions, are aroused, they can show on the muscles of the face. You know when a person is sad or anxious, tired, by how their facial muscles look. So by getting to know your own facial muscles and learning how to be mindful of them and relax them all, I'm just relaxing the muscles around my eyes now. And around the nose and mouth. By being mindful of those and relaxing them, you are also easing off some of the negative emotions which might come up later to disturb you. by this time, a lot of my body, most of it, I've relaxed. So I look at the whole thing now, my whole body. I've been very careful, meticulous, stage by stage, mindfulness and kindness, relaxing as much as I can. And every time I do this, the amount of relaxation is considerable. My body is now far more relaxed than when I started. And I look at it as a whole. What happens next is kind of important in meditation. Once I've relaxed the body, I start to feel this delight, the delight of a relaxed body. It's a pleasure. One of the reasons why I'm aware of that pleasure of relaxation is because once I'm aware of that delight, the relaxation actually goes deeper. Become more at ease. And this tells me just what happens when you have mindfulness, kindness. It does generate delight. But now it's the time to move to the mind, to try and move away from the body awareness as much as possible. So I start focusing on peace. How peaceful do you feel right now? It's also where I learn about what peace actually is. And what deepens that peace. You will find because of this method of body awareness and relaxation, you find you were in the present moment for the last 10 or 15 minutes. And the present moment is peaceful. Much of the busyness of your life has been put aside for a while without you realizing it. Feels nice just being here. So you soon get that insight that peace is made by being in this present moment. You're allowed to be here. You're not being irresponsible at all. This is going to empower you, energize you, refresh you, regenerate, you know, your cognitive processes. And now is the time to be here. And as you go deeper in to this moment, into peace, you soon come to silence. Silence is where you have the courage not to give something a name. We tend to want to name things, to understand them. It gives us a false sense of safety. Kind of we know where we are. But you're perfectly safe here. You don't need to give things a title or a name and how it all works together. Just to know without trying to find a word to encompass it. Are you peaceful? You don't need to give it a name. You know you are. lot of time you don't need to go deeper. The mind deepens by itself. However, if you want to go watching your breathing, just invite the breath in. Breath, what are you doing? And just become aware of breath coming in and a breath going out. Don't complicate it, just one breath at a time. It gives a nice place where the mind can rest. But if you are watching the breath, please see if you can notice the joy of the breath. It's delightful because there's so many other things you just don't need to do. You're free. No one is telling you, do this, do that, do it this way, do it that way. And please know the feeling of freedom. The only thing you have to do, just watch the breath go in. Peace and rest. I will now be quiet. When I speak again, it'll be a minute or two before the end of the meditation. But right now, silence. getting close to the end of the meditation period. How peaceful are you? Can you see the joy of peace? Feel its delight, its flavor. And what caused peace and stillness? And how does your body feel? This is where we get the insights into the great value of meditation. What works? I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. When the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, then open the eyes to come out from the meditation. Excellent. Now, we usually have the opportunity for some questions. We'll start with the questions from overseas first. Is a time for people's brain to get going again. Excellent. Okay, so the first question from Germany. You said that meditation can calm the subconscious, but Ajahn Bhumali said he does not think there is such a concept in Buddhism. Where are memories then? I don't know if I said that meditation can calm the subconscious, but I say so many things, so I'm sure that you can find me saying something somewhere. But where memories are kept in 2 places. First of all, there is, in the physical body, in the brain. There's also the memories which are kept in the mind. And you can't really call it subconscious because you can access that. And then this is how you access it. When you've had a very nice meditation, you ask yourself, this is one way, ask yourself, what's my earliest memory? And then you get these experiences from a long time ago, often your early life memories. And I don't mind. Oh no, I'll say another person's story. This lady, when she was on a retreat, she had some good meditation. What's her earliest memory? And she remembered being a baby, having a feed from her, what she thought was her mother, and she looked up, and the person she saw feeding her was not her mother, at least it didn't look like her. And that kind of shocked her. So when she came out of the meditation later, she asked, me, sort of, is this just a dream? I was actually surprised, this is not what my mother looked like. So I told her, who knows, it may be that you were adopted or something. And I knew her mother, I knew her, and so I suggested to her, next time you see your mum, just ask her, Mum, are you really my mother? She did that. And she's a very good girl, very good daughter. When she asked her mother that question, the mother sort of was shocked. Yes, I'm your mother, what are you talking about? And when she told that story to her mother was surprised and impressed. She said, what did that woman look like? Now when you have these memories from meditation, it's very, very clear. You remember them very easily. And so when she was describing how this wet nurse looked, her mother was really shocked. She said, yes, when we gave birth to you, we hired a wet nurse for you. I never breastfed you. And you've just given an accurate description to this person who fed you in those first weeks when I couldn't. And it was, her mother was totally convinced. So was this woman as well. So where were those memories kept? So sometimes the memories, where are they kept? If you say it's the mind, it's almost like involved in the mind. It's not stored anywhere, because otherwise, how can people have legitimate memories from their past lives? And these are true. It's not stored in the body, it's not almost stored anywhere. It's just like accessible. Anyway, the next one from Charles. Dear Ajahn, how do we balance between study and meditation practice? Too much study, no experience, too much meditation without study. I get a sense of directionless practice. Sometimes I remember in the time of the Buddha, people would only learn a couple of suttas, not much. They would meditate a lot and get fully enlightened. These days people have more information, more instructions than ever. Sometimes concerned, do you have an information overload? But the most important thing has to be the practice. That's where you can test it out. Is this real? Even things like past lives. Can you recall those past lives? Once you do, of course, there's no doubt at all left. But anyway, study and meditation. Don't just do meditation, always have a challenge as well, because there's so many types of meditation, and some of them are a bit sort of dodgy types of meditation. But find out the ones which really work. And number two, just find out the ones which the Buddha taught. I said this before, sometimes people say to me, oh Ajahn Brahm, you're just pushing these things too much. But this is how the Buddha taught, it's in the Gopika Moggallana Sutta. Just when somebody asked Ananda, after the Buddha just passed away, what type of meditation did the Buddha promote and teach? And Ananda replied, the Buddha only recommended four types of meditation. First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. These deep meditations. For everybody, lay people too. So these are deep meditations, but you get very, very still and powerful. So you learn those, you read that, and you know it for yourself, and you practice, and you know what these things are. And then, of course, you realize just how powerful these teachings are. Another one from Germany, Eiko. Dear Ajahn, how can I integrate the peace more into my life and not water the seeds of anger, fear, and worry and unhappiness? How can I do that? Thank you. To meditate more, but at the end of every meditation, just you're teaching yourself. when you reflect, how does peace feel like? And after a good meditation, a lot of times you're so bright and so energized, finding solutions to problems. You know, people sometimes think, oh, you're a monk, what do you know about the world? But you know, I've been an abbot for so many years now, and of course there are problems you have to solve, and find innovative ways of solving those. And sometimes the meditation is how you solve them. You get great ideas afterwards. And sometimes you also know that you don't do anything, and many of those problems solve themselves. I don't know if it was here, I think it was probably here, maybe a Friday night talk, I mentioned like the little insight. I read this, but it makes so much sense. The difference between an irritation and a problem. Have you got many problems in life? Are they really problems? And this was after the Second World War, maybe 1950 or 55 or something. And this American backpacker was traveling through Europe, just doing odd jobs to pay his bills as he went along. He got a job in a restaurant as a waiter, sometimes having to wash dishes or whatever. But when you're just a waiter, you know, you get free food. That's one of the attractions there. You get fed and also make a little bit of money. And that's enough to keep going on. And he's in Vienna. And then Vienna, the owner of the restaurant announced to his staff that they had ordered too much sauerkraut, which was like pickled cabbage. So anyone who wanted a free food had to eat sauerkraut. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, he didn't care. Otherwise, you had to pay for it. So the American was really upset. So you can't do this to us, I don't like sauerkraut. And so he complained. And that was when the cook, this old cook, came out and told him, he said, young man, I want to tell you the difference between an irritation and a problem. And at that, the cook just bared his arm, and you could see the numbers tattooed on his arm. I was in Auschwitz, he said. Being in Auschwitz is a problem. I didn't know whether I was going to go to bed that night or be executed. I survived. Living in Auschwitz is a problem. Eating sauerkraut for breakfast, lunch and dinner is an irritation. So that means you can let go of much more than you ever thought of when you know the difference between an irritation and a problem. Now from some back from AC, where's AC? Anyway, it doesn't matter. It feels like my heart is a monster ready to bite back. I want to be kind, but I don't know how. I want to open the door of my heart to myself. I feel sad that I can't do it. What can I do? Give yourself time to open the door of your heart to yourself. There's also wonderful exercises. And these are simple exercises. My first meditation teacher, I was still a student, told me every morning when I get up, he said, what do you do? I said, go toilet. Great, is there a mirror in the toilet? Yes. Look at yourself in the mirror and smile. And I told my teacher, it's a problem. I'm a young man, sometimes I stay up late at night. In the morning I'd be afraid to look at myself. And of course he giggled and then he said, doesn't matter, look at yourself in the mirror. If you can't smile at yourself, two fingers, push up. And I've told you so many times, I did that for 2 years without missing one morning. And as a young man, I was hairy with a beard, believe it or not. And I smiled at myself in the mirror, and this stupid young man was making a face at me, that was me. And I laughed, and the one in the mirror laughed. Every morning I ended up laughing at myself. For 2 years, every morning. And that's actually how you love yourself. You don't take yourself or life as seriously as you used to. It's serious, yes, but you don't take it as negatively as you used to. And during the COVID time, you know, sometimes it's nice to hug somebody, but COVID, you had to keep social distancing. So there you do. You know, this other way of loving yourself, put your hands out, bring them in, and give yourself a good hug. Get into it, feel it, do it properly. That's a way of loving yourself. And even just after the COVID time, when there was all these accusations of celibate monks and priests and stuff having sexual abusing others, it's much safer to hug yourself than hug somebody else if you're a monk. You can't get into trouble. So that's one of the ways of loving oneself. Just, you know, just learning just how to care for yourself. This is one of the ways I practice. I mention this because sometimes, maybe in the afternoon, I just ask my body. I do a lot of work. I just come back from Hong Kong. When I come back, I ask myself, body, how are you? Simple mindfulness. And sometimes my body replies, I'm tired. And so, do you want to go to sleep? My body says, yes. And I know that my body is not indulging. It is tired. And I trust that answer. And I lay down, and if I really am tired, I go to sleep almost as soon as your head hits the pillow. For half an hour, 45 minutes. And I've done this so many times, I like experimenting. And then when you wake up afterwards, you've got full energy. It's as if your body is telling you, yes, you need to. And because I listen to my body, I don't indulge it. And then I listen to it, and then it pays me back. I always think that my body and I should be a good friend. That's called caring for it. My mind and I, good friends. If I think some stupid thought, okay, mind, if that's what you want to do, fine by me. I don't own you, I'm not going to control you. Then it doesn't want to think a stupid thought anymore. It's my friend. So anyway, you feel like your heart is a monster ready to bite back. Just imagine it's a love bite back. It comes from your heart. It's just, maybe you're pushing it too much, forcing it too much. And just, you know, relax a little bit more and you find that it's fine. Okay, now those were 1, 2, 3, 4 questions from overseas. 4, okay, yeah. Any questions from here now about the meditation? It's quite amazing, these talks are just streamed to so many countries overseas. Any questions from here? Okay, so we can finish off now. Because you haven't got any questions, I don't expect any lines in front afterwards. That was a joke, I know there's going to be a line afterwards. But I do have a appointment at 5 o'clock outside, so I can't stay too long here. Okay. So now just